Welcome to Money Markets and Masterminds, CityWire South Africa podcast that delves into the intricate world of finance, investment, and strategic decision-making. If you're a fund selector or an independent financial advisor looking for insights, analysis, and expert opinions to enhance your perspective, you're in the right place here with me, editor Ruan Uister. Today is the sixth episode of an underlying series in partnership with Morning South Africa and their head of investments, Sean Neertling, called Mind Over Markets. It provides the latest insights on monthly investment trends by exploring key market developments, whether it is equities, fixed income, commodities, or alternative investments. For most of the last 3 years, U.S. markets led by large cap growth companies have surged while other developed and emerging markets have struggled to keep up. As a grouping, emerging markets seem to have lost their luster and global investors appear more willing to rotate allocations within the U.S. as opposed to allocating capital outside its borders. The result is that the valuation gap between the U.S. and emerging markets is widening as broader developing regions haven't seen the level of flows to support sustained investment performance. Some of the big questions are whether investors will continue to shun emerging markets or if lower valuations and recent stimulus measures introduced by China will see these markets rally. And there are other countries or regions that we should be looking at. And do these locations have a place in an investor portfolio? We have Sean Neertling back in the studio today, the head of investments at Morningstar South Africa, to provide us with some of the answers to all these questions. Welcome back, Sean.
Hi, everyone. Good to be back.
Sean, developing markets have been emerging in inverted commas for a long time. It feels as though they have struggled to sustain investors' interest. Why do you think this is? And are we even close to a point to start expecting emerging markets to deliver good performance?
Sure, Ruan. So I think there are probably, three things that would feed into that. I think one, emerging markets, like you rightly pointed out, are actually a very diverse group of companies that are quite different in terms of the underlying economic fundamentals. So within that group, there are some countries and regions where the combination of low valuations and let's call it stronger fundamentals are likely to contribute to better equity performance. And within that mix, there are also some countries that are less investable and maybe more fully priced. I think the second thing that's worth mentioning is that currency also plays an important role in emerging market performance, especially for global dollar-based investors. I think on average, those currencies have been a drag on returns, especially with the recent strength of the US dollar. So I think countries, again, with weaker fundamentals will see their currencies continue to come under pressure, especially in this environment, and that would feed into performance. And then I think the last point, which we find particularly interesting at Morningstar is that we tend to think about emerging markets mostly from an equity perspective. But emerging market debt is actually a highly investable asset class. And we do think that is priced to deliver fair returns, just given the attractiveness, again, of starting yields and cheaper currencies. So I think if you look across emerging markets, again, probably mixed performance if you take just equities. And then we do think emerging market debt can be expected to deliver good returns just given where yields currently are.
Sean, there's a perception that emerging markets are more riskier than developed markets. Is it fair to say that this has contributed to the lower investor demand when compared to the US and other developed markets? And do you agree that emerging markets are more risky or is perceived as higher risk?
Yeah, that's a difficult question, Ruan. I think that perception is mostly fair. So I think orienting from the perspective of a global investor, I would probably say emerging markets, and again, as a group, are less understandable than developed markets. And as an outcome of that, investors would probably mark it up as higher risk. So the so-called, let's call it risk premium for a global investor would be higher in general for emerging markets versus developed markets, and certainly higher than the US. I think that is a sensible approach on average, but it largely depends on how you define risk. And more importantly, from our side, how you assign probabilities to that. We would probably argue that paying substantially more for an asset than what it's worth is the highest risk investment decision, since you can permanently lose capital if that asset sells off. And that's largely irrespective of whether the country or region maps as developed or emerging. And I think, the case of South Africa is a really good example of perceived higher risk, where lots has been baked into the underlying, let's call it asset or equity prices. And it's almost assumed that all those risks would play out at the exact same point in time. So that's not saying that there's not risk, but the probability of all those events playing out is probably lower than what most people expect. And so the impact somewhat less severe. And I think you can broadly wrap emerging markets within that framework. What I'd probably sum up with here is to say, if you look at investment risk without considering price, that's somewhat incomplete. And if we just look across emerging markets, the current, let's call it risk and reward trade-off, is actually very attractive. Again, it's a broad basket of countries. So, you know, where, let's say, the rule of law is questionable, there's not necessarily a price low enough to justify that, simply because those regions are too difficult to understand, with payoff profiles that are difficult to quantify.
Sean, if we take a look at emerging market equity markets across the globe, which countries are you seeing as good investment destinations? And what are the investment cases behind them? But also, in the same breath, are there any emerging market equity landscapes that we should avoid, and why?
So, Ron, I think if we look at just in terms of countries and regions that we think expect to offer, let's call it good expected equity returns, I think China and China tech, in particular, with those consumer-led Chinese businesses, it's a large captive market with what we would consider companies having strong, let's call it economic moats. So, yeah, you can think of companies like Tencent, Meituan, and Tencent, where they actually hold sizable market shares. I think the overall investment thesis for China is probably lagging expectations, but we've seen how quickly that market can actually move, just given the recent stimulus measures introduced there. So I think, you know, China is one of our highest conviction, I suppose, views across emerging market equities. And then we think South Korea is also another country that's well-positioned, that provides, let's call it tech exposure that looks somewhat less expensive than US tech. And it also feeds into the semiconductor supply chain. So you've got companies there like Samsung and SK Hynix, which make up more than 30% of a very concentrated market. So I think those would probably be our two highest conviction ideas on the equity side. We have previously held dedicated positions in Brazil, I'd say in previous ownership cycles. That is a market that's similar to South Africa. It does screen as somewhat cheap to us at this point in time. It's also a market that is fairly volatile. So it's got large commodity exposure through companies like Petrobras and Vale, and then also some really high quality banks that have historically delivered good returns on capital. Again, not part of our portfolios at this point in time, but if we just look at that Latin America region, you could probably put Mexico in that mix as well. And it does screen as somewhat attractive. I would say in terms of what we would avoid, or maybe better put, in terms of what we would assign lower conviction to, it's those countries or regions where, you know, the range of outcomes are probably wider than what we would want at this point, and fundamentals are actually difficult to quantify. So Turkey is probably a really good example here, an equity market that in local currency has performed really well. But I think there's a big bet that investors take on the Turkish lira. It's a political system that's difficult to understand. And you probably don't have the autonomy that you need in terms of monetary policy. So there's probably good ideas there. I think just from a standing start, the potential payoff's not really enough for us to spend a large amount of time researching it. And then I think on other countries, which we currently wouldn't allocate to, simply because we think, you know, valuations are maybe a bit stretched. So India, for example, come to mind. A lot is baked into the economic expectation in terms of growth rates. So, you know, if we look at those high growth rates, plus not especially cheap valuations, we don't necessarily think at this point in time, just given how that market runs or has run, it's calling for, let's call it, for capital at this point. So those would probably be the two that I would cite as currently we wouldn't allocate capital.
Sean, on the previous podcast, we spoke about active and passive investment considerations. Now, what I want to know, are these decisions applied differently to or in emerging markets?
Yeah, Rowan, that's a really good question. I think as a general rule of thumb, I think on our side, we are more likely to hold, let's call it, passive exposure when we think markets are cheaper, and more active exposure, let's say, when markets are more expensive. I think when markets are priced at a fair, let's call it, discount, I would say buying that broad market at a low cost would be a sensible way to allocate. And especially so for emerging markets, where you've got two very large constituents in China and India that are going to drive returns. I think what's interesting within that emerging market complex and those two countries in particular is that they've had very divergent performance. So you've seen India become a larger index constituent, and the relative size of China actually shrinking in the index over time. So while, again, we think that, you know, EM as a group is cheap, The parts, I would say, of the market that have been driving performance, if you look at that performance of India, is actually the parts where we hold lower conviction. So it's actually a really good example of, you know, being careful of labeling whole countries or regions as cheap or expensive. So currently we hold, let's call it dedicated EM passive positions. We have been trimming that exposure for more granular entry points, again, into those countries that I've mentioned. And those would be more, let's call it, especially like a South Korea position, would be more opportunistic. So we would typically look again at accessing it on a passive basis. But at the same time, as the market shifts, we would look to actively manage those weights. And then I think probably the most important point from a South African perspective worth mentioning is that, you know, how you actually access EM is largely dependent on what you can call investment structure. So we prefer, let's call it, more granular entry points when we manage funds or portfolios in a fund structure. Again, we're able to leverage sort of our capital markets work to allocate our best ideas. I do think within a model structure, we would typically lean more into manager research and selection, and we would typically allocate and implement those ideas through more active managers who are better positioned to move as the market shifts over time.
Sean, let's talk a bit about bonds. Emerging market debt is a term being thrown around by specialized fixed income managers quite a lot lately. What should investors consider or be aware of where emerging market bonds are concerned? And is this a position you hold in your portfolios? And what is the reason for that? And if not, why not?
Yeah, so we hold emerging market government debt issued mainly in local currencies, so their home currencies. We don't have any allocations to the emerging market debt issued by corporates. The investment thesis is centered mostly around, let's call it, diversifying our fixed income allocations in multi-asset portfolios, where emerging market debt actually shows a low correlation to US and developed market bonds, as well as dollar-denominated investment-grade credit. So it provides a bit of an asymmetric payoff profile for us because of those low correlations. So I think, you know, what may be worth mentioning is just some key considerations that we look at here. I think the first is whether we allocate to local or hard currency. The hard currency, which is usually dollar denominated, is actually less attractively priced than local currency. And the best way to actually think about that is local currency, what you're actually getting is an additional yield for the risk of the currency on top of the expected risk of that government that's issuing the debt. We don't necessarily get compensated for taking that exposure in dollars. Again, we actually prefer local currency emerging market debt because many issuers have currencies that trade at a discount or what we think is a discount to the US dollar. I think the second thing that's maybe worth mentioning is, you know, when you're looking at allocations, do you take hedged or unhedged exposure? Again, this is related to currency. But this feeds more into portfolio construction. And the way that we would largely think about this is to balance, let's say, that upside that currencies can potentially give you, but at the same time mitigate some of the downside risk by taking too much of a bet on the currency. And again, the last point maybe that I'd mention here would be from a portfolio perspective again, to consider all in, let's call it, emerging market exposure. So both debt and equity. I think there's a tendency to maybe bucket them separately, which does make sense at a pure asset class level, but it's important to manage that total debt exposure appropriately across the different client mandates that is managed.
Sean, I want to move closer to home, South Africa. After the mini budget yesterday, where the Minister of Finance says there's going to be no more bailouts, they're going to rein in spending, they're going to pay off the debt, all the good promises. But how do we stack up into the broader context of the emerging market universe? You know, South African equities have rallied and bonds are having one of the best years of their lives. But from a global investor perspective, is South Africa with its new GNU or GNU political framework back on the radar? And what is the outlook for South African equities and bonds compared to our emerging market peers?
Yeah, so I think we've definitely seen a sentiment shift in South Africa that's largely been fueled by the rally post-election. Again, that appears to be mostly led by local investors and actually more in the small and mid-cap space that have delivered relatively stronger return than I suppose their large-cap peers. We haven't seen, let's say, foreign inflows in size. There are some, let's say, foreign investors that are allocating or nibbling in our bond market, but nothing meaningful in the equity space. I also think, you know, that those foreign flows are going to be lower and slower than what people expect. And there's maybe a bit of hangover year stemming from Ramaphosa a couple of years ago, you know, where there was probably a very exuberant market that got ahead of itself, and this got baked into asset prices. So I think if I go back, I'd say from a Rand investor perspective, you know, domestic equities are undeniably cheap, but not equally so. So if you look at those underlying sectors, financials, industrials, and resources, there are dispersions within that. We do think South African bonds are especially cheap and attractive, and we hold those in overweight positions in mandates. I think coming back to your question from a global investor perspective, we do think there's probably still a question around economic growth. And that's also linked to policymaking and implementation. And I think this is where the GNU, as you called it, you know, still has to demonstrate how it actually works practically. So I think policymaking in South Africa is going to be interesting, not just to show that it's forward thinking in terms of addressing, you know, those social constraints around unemployment, job creation, poverty alleviation, but also what I'd probably call the absence of extreme, you know, populism like we've seen in previous cycles. So that would include sort of infringing on property rights, you know, and policies, for example, like expropriation of land without compensation. So I think the government still needs to demonstrate that it can make sensible policy and then implement that. Capital does tend to flow where it's treated best. And I think the current uncertainty that you have would probably keep global investors at bay. But it would largely depend on the intent and the commitment that government makes to certain reforms.
Let's talk about the next elephant in the room, and that's the US. The elections are coming, would be held next week. And, you know, the US has constantly delivered the best returns over the last decade, plus years, actually. But do you see this change post the election? And what do you think currently limits these investors currently invested in the US to move into emerging markets, rather?
Yeah, everyone. So I think, you know, the US is an interesting market. Again, you know, we're particularly mindful of not calling whole markets cheap or expensive. I think in aggregate, the US is expensive, but there are pockets of value. So I think, you know, investors can allocate capital in a way there that maintains an allocation to the US without really stretching client portfolios and overextending them into those overvalued parts of the market. I think a lot of, you know, what happens in elections tends to almost front run what's going to happen in markets or expectations thereof. So I think if you look at it in terms of the two candidates, the current polls show, I suppose, Trump slightly ahead. From our perspective, you know, we pretty much just pay attention to what valuations are signaling at a different point in time. What we have seen in the US, for example, especially over the last quarter, is a bit of a rotation. So you've seen those, you know, very, very punchy large cap growth sectors give up, I suppose, some performance to small and mid caps. And again, value probably having a better quarter than, let's call it, large cap growth. So I think you're starting to see a bit of a rotation within the US as US investors become mindful of valuations. If we sort of superimpose that onto emerging markets, and you just look at it at a benchmark level, and you take something like the ACWI. The ACWI basically has a 90-10 split, so 90% developed markets, of which 60% is the US, and you've got a 10% allocation to emerging markets. So emerging markets don't actually compete for capital with the US. Maybe some parts of the developed market complex, but they don't actually compete for capital with the US. So what you're likely to see in emerging markets, again, is this rotation between different parts that are more or less attractive. And I think because the US is such a concentrated piece, you'd probably just find, again, the rotation across those different size and factor exposures.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. And as we navigate these uncertain times, staying informed and ahead of the curve is more important than ever. Thank you, Sean, for joining us for another episode of Mind Over Markets with Morningstar. We look forward to meeting with you next month for another in-depth discussion and some actionable insights, especially after the US elections. To all our Citywire South Africa listeners, thank you for tuning into this episode of Money Markets Masterminds with me, editor Rowan Uster, and my producer, Vera Loba de Silva from the Citywire Studios team. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your network. We are available on all major platforms such as Spotify and Apple Apple Podcasts, and all Citywire South Africa's podcasts and videos are available on its homepage. Go register and have a look at our wealth of multimedia content on our website. And with that, and until next time, goodbye.